Welcome to Take Note, a podcast about notebooks, attention, and parenting. And above all, it's an appreciation of the possibilities of any given moment. My name is Adam. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Adam.
So we start each show by doing what do you got? And that's the section where we each talk about what we've written down in our notebook over the last couple of weeks. So, Ted, what do you got?
Well, I just got back from vacation to Mexico. So a lot of my notebook-related experiences this week are kind of through that lens, the travel lens, the beach lens, the, you know, kids on vacation lens. So the first one I got is actually on the flight home. My three-year-old son was sitting next to me on the flight, and he was getting his iPad fired up, which every parent knows the age when a child can watch an iPad on a plane is truly an age of freedom, which was actually a little while ago. But anyway, I'm kicking that thing up, and there was probably a nine-year-old girl sitting next to him on the other side. She was doing her own thing. She had her all set up. She was happy as a clam. But he's setting up Frozen, and he's picking it. He presses the little iPad buttons, and it gets going. He turns to this little girl and says, "You want to watch Frozen?" And she says, I've already seen Frozen. And he kind of stopped, looked around, turned back to her and said, "Have you seen Sword in the Stone?" And she didn't respond to that. That's my first one. What do you got?
All right. Well, so I wrote this down. I do a lot of times I end up writing at like the end of the night when I'm barely awake, and I've fallen asleep multiple times just because I'm like, oh, let me write a page down, and I'm just too asleep to do it. So I wrote this down while I was very sleepy the other night. I wrote 12:45, listening to the Magnetic Fields, a couple books open but not reading either of them really. The dog stretches in bed, her paws tap as she walks over to me and nudges my arm with her front part, not a snout that I can't think of the name of because I'm tired. It is a snout, but also a muzzle. She nuzzled me with her muzzle. I was muzzle nuzzled.
I love that you could manage to write all of those thoughts down, but anything beyond just pure transcription of the thought process was more than your brain could handle. But you did make it to muzzle nuzzled.
Yeah, it was a stretch, but I got there.
Solid. That's solid work. I'm just leafing through my see, you've been working on the same field notes for a little while now. Let's see, here's a note I took. I was probably sitting on some patio somewhere with an ocean breeze blowing upon me at the time I wrote this, but I said the notebook on vacation is a greatly rewarding alternative to the phone. For all the same reasons as usual, but accentuated by the increased call to connect with one's own self more than the ceaseless output of others. To check the news on vacation is a shock to the system, for which the pocket notebook is worthy insulation. So it was like, really, it was that chance to say, what do I pull out right now? I'm on vacation. I'm trying to disconnect. I'm successfully disconnecting. And now I have this quiet moment to myself. The kids are off doing God knows what. What do I pull out? Phone, which I had Wi-Fi and everything, or notebook. And in that moment, I chose notebook, and I appreciated myself. And in a sense, I think that's what this is all about. What is it? What makes you choose a notebook? And so that note was about choosing a notebook.
That's great. It's sort of funny that what you chose to note in that moment was the fact that you were going to choose a notebook instead of a phone, right? Like there's sort of a, I don't know, I've got something similar here that I was thinking of talking about. I wouldn't call what you did affectation, but I definitely do that every once in a while. I'm going to say once every 6 months, I will recopy something into my notebook just because I like the way it looked on a piece of paper. And this week I wrote in my notebook, buy tomatoes and milk, after I got back from the store with the tomatoes and milk, because I wrote it on a scrap of paper. And there's something, there was a combination of tomatoes and milk that amused me, and that was all that was on the list. And then I just thought about how silly it was that I would recopy that down, even though I didn't need it anymore.
That brings to mind I think it was a Tumblr from a few years ago. I haven't used Tumblr in a while, but this was one of them. So there was a fellow who would, when he found discarded shopping lists, would, I think he would use his graphic design skills he would just put the shopping list into a beautiful graphic design layout. That was kind of interesting. Similar idea. The list is a work of art in its own sense. I was actually in the grocery store just before recording and found myself unsatisfied with the way I was crossing out the items on my list. I was just doing it very roughly and very quickly, and I was like, that is below my standard. I need to work on that. So I started, being a little more complete with my crossing out.
There's something so satisfying about crossing out the list, but less satisfying if you're crossing it out in an incomplete or a disappointing way, I guess.
I was a little disappointed with myself.
That's all right. We'll let it go.
Well, all of our notes have been about taking notes. Maybe that's because our podcast is called Take Note. So, it's worth saying that many other of my vacation notes are actually, I would say, recording experiences, wonderful Tuesday, et cetera, et cetera. So they weren't all Ouroboros snakes eating their own tail, navel-gazing notes about note-taking. But I think, given the theme of our podcast, that was what jumped out at me. You got anything else in the what do you got section?
I've got one thing here. I was I was listening to podcast and interview with the author Elif Batuman, who wrote The Idiot, a book that I read last year that I really like and I can't stop thinking about, even though it's a book in where not much happens. But so I will go and I will try to find, she's on a paperback tour now, so try to find interviews. And I found an interview with her on the podcast Other People by Brad Listy. And she said at one point in this interview, why should anyone be ashamed of anything? And that's something that she thinks about in the book and writes about in the book. And there's someone who's ashamed in the book. And it was a realization that she had, I guess, while she was writing the book, The Idiot. So I wrote that. And then I also wrote the theme of an improv comic we saw last night. We went to an improv show. The idea was that a stand-up comedian would go on stage and bomb, and then a couple improv comics would come out and ask the stand-up questions about the set that they've done that bombed, or set they've done that bombed in the past, and then they would improv about it. It was like a really preachy improv. In fact, it was so preachy that they kept saying preach, and they kept getting serious at moments. And at one moment they said, one of their points was the guy said that he teaches in his improv class. And I liked this part that, improv is just, realizing that you shouldn't be ashamed or embarrassed by anything you do. You shouldn't be ashamed by your set. You shouldn't be, ashamed or embarrassed by what anybody else is doing on stage. That seemed like a great point to get to. And he said that once you shake all of that embarrassment or all of that being ashamed, that's when you truly become an improv. But I didn't really like their set that much.
Improv is, it's almost like they are, when you're in the audience of an improv show, you get to offload your shame onto them. Right? Like, or they take all the risk and you reap all the reward. But I guess the appeal is that they're walking that line, right, between disaster and, I don't know, euphoria. Yeah.
My one experience with improv was there was an improv club in high school, and I went, I think I was a freshman. I went to the first class, the very first improv we had to do. I did something, it wasn't good or funny, and the next person in the group made fun of me. Like, his improv was making fun of how bad mine was, and I was so ashamed that I left immediately and never came back. Yeah.
Wow. So you were this recent one, you were at an improv show. Was it like mm-hmm. a small theater?
Yeah, it's a bunch of small theaters combined into a massive building in Lincoln Park in Chicago.
A bunch of small theaters combined into a massive park.
A massive building massive in Lincoln Park. Yeah.
A massive park in Lincoln building.
Yes. Lincoln was, there's a bunch of Lincolns combined into a park. Yeah.
So at the Lincoln building, you got muzzle nuzzled at the theater park.
I'm getting ashamed now of this.
In a way, I think that this, we could tie this back to our idea of feeling self-conscious about pulling out a notebook. Because I think that we talked about last episode, where there's a certain sense of, going past some accepted boundary of what you should be doing with your hands in an idle moment. I think improv is kind of saying you're not supposed to get up in front of people and try to be funny if you don't have a plan. You're supposed to go to Toastmasters and write out the joke with the with the punchline at the beginning. I was actually thinking about the other day, kind of public speaking in a workplace setting, you know, where some people just have a real knack for telling that joke at the beginning that disarms everybody, it makes them feel relaxed, and that makes them kind of trust what everybody's saying. And then I was thinking about the people I know that have failed, that have attempted to tell a joke at the beginning, and it just flops, and it has the kind of the inverse effect where nobody really trusts what you're saying after that. And I just had this very simple thought that people who are bad at that should not try to tell a joke when they...
Oh, absolutely.
And you actually earn back that trust when people realize you're not going to be funny. Like, that's almost it's your own kind of, like, badass move to be like, I don't need to tell a joke. I'm just presenting on a thing.
To be comfortable enough to not say anything is quite something. I'm not there yet. But I think 8 times out of 10, my jokes score. Though one or two times when they don't, I can remember all of them. And it's very painful every time. It continues to be painful.
So you're just a freshman in high school all over again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think the improv really did its job in your educational process there.
Yep, absolutely.
Perhaps a teacher could have stepped in at that critical moment. Where are the good teachers in 1997?
I can visualize the face of the kid. Anyway, whatever.
All right, should we move on to what are you using? That's what are you using? That's where I think we can dig in a little bit to the tools that we are putting into use, taking these notes about taking these notes. So what are you using?
Well, Ted, I'm using a bunch of blue pencils. I actually wrote a post on our blog about blue pencils and how I'd like to have a collection of them. I currently have 4.
What qualifies as a collection? Because 4 feels solid. Like a solid
start. That feels great. So I've got a collection of blue pencils. I was at CW Pencils in New York in November, and I picked up a couple of blue, and I got this idea there that maybe I would be the guy, the blue pencil guy. And I bought a couple, I had a couple, and I wrote on our blog that the the first challenge of being a blue pencil guy is that I'm colorblind. So a couple of the pencils, like I'll check with Jennifer, my wife, and she says, yeah, it's blue. And, you know, she's able to see color, but I still don't totally believe her. So I've been using blue pencils, and I've been the Blackwing 73. Maybe you and I split a package of those. I don't know.
Or some. I have some. You have some.
Yeah. I'm really trying to use that one as much as I can because I also like a short pencil. I like a pencil that might fit in my ear without injuring myself or my child, you know, without it sticking out too far. And actually on our Twitter, a couple of folks recommended additional blue pencils, including the people from CW Pencils and the gentleman from Leadfast, whose name I am blanking on at the moment. But they recommended additional blue pencils to add to the collection.
Yeah, very cool.
Let me be clear. These are regular pencils that are just painted blue on the outside.
I see that. That's an important distinction to me, as opposed to writing with a blue pencil, which would actually be slightly unusual unless you were in a developing country, like taking train tickets or something.
Or if I was paranoid that people were going to copy down my notebooks and using, you know, there's that there's a blue color that won't reproduce if you Xerox it.
Yes, the well-known Xerox Bandit phenomenon. Circa 1989.
I wonder if scanners pick up that non-repro blue now. I wonder if that's technology that somebody worked really hard on that's completely useless now.
They're sitting in a house, an old house somewhere, in a recliner, just shaking their head, watching Fox News. I am using a notebook that was sent to me by the celebrity in my family, my sister, Ada, who is the owner of Main Street Books, Davidson, North Carolina, a charming small-town bookstore, literally on the main street. My sister is the owner of the town bookstore on Main Street. Her husband is the chief of the fire department of this small town. So when they walk down the street, I literally feel like I'm in an episode of the Gilmore Girls. Just a wildly pleasant sensation. Anyway, I ordered...
Are you Jess or are you... Logan.
But I ordered some books from her, actually, because now I'm not allowed to order books from the online retailer whose name I will not even speaketh. I got to get all my books through Main Street Books, which does, in fact, have an online purchasing function. But as a little, you know, family insider treat, she sent me a notebook from blackbirdletterpress.com, which is, in fact, a modified vintage postcard.
Oh, really?
So Blackbird Letterpress has taken an old postcard from the Lazy V Motel in Bridgman, Michigan. On US 12, Bridgman, Michigan, 12 miles south Benton Harbor, Michigan, 80 miles.
Benton Harbor, sure.
But it's been nicely bound together, and it's got this nice letterpress. But there's actually they preserved the it's an actual postcard someone wrote. Dear Sue, we are having a real good time. We got here about 1. See you soon, Joan. This was sent to Sue Rick Creek at 2809 Cheltenham, Toledo, Ohio, in 1951. But anyway, it's a really nice little notebook. So thank you to my famous sister, Ada, and one of our listeners. Hello, Eliza, if you're listening. Hello, Eliza.
Do you think that Ada sent that just for the plug on our podcast?
it wouldn't surprise me. These in business, these especially if you're self-employed, you got to be creative. You got to find ways, ways to buzz market.
So that reminds me, that postcard reminds me, there's a great Twitter account called Postcard from the Past. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's a photo of a postcard, and then the text is one sentence out of context, you know, kind of out of context from the postcard. I shall try to contact Donald tomorrow evening is the text on one of the Bellevue Hotel somewhere. And I dance the night away. I'm not missing mom and dad at all is the text on one from a postcard from Rodos. I don't know where Rodos is. Maybe it's in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
A road? Oh, no, that's two towns over. You gotta keep going down 471 there. You'd be at Rodos before nightfall. What? So the other thing I'm using, just because, Adam, we're doing a segment here, all right? Focus. The other thing that I'm using is my Sakura Pigma Micron 05. Size in an orange, and I will say I have discovered and acquired a far deeper appreciation for this pen, and I'll tell you why. I was on vacation, as I mentioned, and I found myself at the beachside bar. It was a part of this lovely resort that we were at. I had a couple of hours, shocking to say, of free time as the children napped in the room. So I made my way down to the most promising potential source of margaritas at 1:30 in the afternoon, and set myself down in a chair, didn't move for a good hour or so. When I stood up, realized that my back end was completely damp. The chair I'd been sitting in was not actively wet, but it was just in this kind of realm of beach things where anything can be kind of damp at any given moment. And my field notes was in my back pocket. So my field notes got wet, which is, it didn't get completely soaked through, but this kind of halo around every edge. So, you know, pretty much through the entire book, there's this kind of ring of moisture. And my Pilot G2 maroon ink and my Pilot G2 orange ink that I'd been excited about completely washed out, illegible. But the ink that withstood it, first of all, any of the ballpoint ink, like the Uniball Jetstream, that was sturdy as a rock, didn't go anywhere. The Pilot Acro Ball ballpoint didn't go anywhere. And the Sakura Pigma Micron orange ink, you didn't even see a flicker of bleed in an orange ink. And I was like, holy crap, that is awesome. And they sell it on the side. You know, they say it's micropigment ink for waterproof and fade-proof lines. But I'm sold. And, you know, I've heard, like, on the Pen Addict podcast and stuff like that, they'll talk about inks being waterproof and finding that. And I never really given it a second thought because who thinks, oh, I need a waterproof ink? But literally, the inks that were not waterproof were erased by moisture. And I have to say, the other thing that went nowhere was unaffected by this, everything in pencil. So,
right.
New appreciation for the Pigma Microns, for their durability under duress.
Where do you buy a pen like that? And let me just say, if the answer is Amazon, tell me it's the Main Street Bookstore in Davidson.
Where do I buy what?
Where do you buy the pen?
I bought this one at Texas Art Supply here in Houston, Texas, which is that's one of those places where you get excited to go. It's a 40-year-old mainstay here in the city. And I just happened to be driving by one day, and I popped in, and I had never explored their pen section until a couple months ago. But they actually have a lot of good just a wide variety of pen, a lot of drawing pens, so they actually have a lot of these Pigma Microns, but they also just have, you know, Pilots and all this other kinds of junk.
Nice. I'll have to look for one of those at the art store.
JetPens, JetPens.com. That's another good place to get them. Main Street Books is not, I don't believe, advanced into the pen world. I think that maybe they have a few specialty pens. Every time I visit, I like to pretend that I have all the knowledge necessary to get them going on a stationery and pen related section of the store. When we get her on the
show, they're more interested in making money. It's got to be tough. You own a bookstore and somebody just keeps telling you what to do. That's exactly what I would do.
You're going to make your... Sis, you're going to make your fortune $1.36 at a time. That's just... That's the... Just multiply that times 15,000 a week. How many people do you get in there a week?
We got to move all the Knausgaard to the front. All right? The town wants Knausgaard. What?
So anyway, you know, I was shocked at the effect that this water had on a lot of my ink, but I felt like it was one of those opportunities to learn a little something more about the tools that I was using. That gave me a little bit deeper insight, and I'll tell you, it makes me a lot more hesitant to use those colorful Pilot pens because they didn't stand up too well. The maroon one that I used, it actually hung in there, but it like turned, the water turned the maroon ink blue. So it's still there, but it's blue. There must have been some strange chemical reaction. I couldn't even begin to understand.
Well, how did everything get so wet and you weren't aware? How many margaritas did you have? Do you realize you told me before that it wasn't actually wet? But in a beach, anything can be wet, man.
You know that feeling when you, when you've had maybe 1 3/4 margaritas, and you go,
yeah,
you go, you say to yourself, I do not know what's going to happen when I stand up. Like when I stand up out of this seat, that could be it. I might just be gone, or I might have to sleep away the rest of the day.
While you were talking, I texted the bartender, and he said you just dumped the notebook right in the margarita. You know, why don't the notebook companies make margarita-friendly notebooks?
It's got to be an alternate to the Expedition, right?
Yeah.
I love it. You got any other tools?
Yeah, you know, while we're talking about tools, I thought maybe we would mention this website, Graphite Confidential, that just went up. I saw it online today. It is a history. It's a history website where each article is about a vintage pencil, and then they tell you not really about the pencil, a little bit. Barely anything about the pencil, but they tell you some story about history or the what the pencil was made for. So I read one about the Museum of Science and Industry. It was a 1940s Museum of Science and Industry pencil, but the article was really all about the Museum of Science and Industry. And I read one about the New York Jewish Guild for the Blind, which I had no idea about. And it's a charity that still exists today that supports blind people all over the country. But I thought it was really good website, and their photos of pencils are clearer and less dusty than my photos of pencils.
I read the Southern Hutch something Methodist Cafeteria Kansas State Fair entry. And I was just struck by the level of detail that they delved into. And the, yeah, really thoughtful content, really interesting.
I'm looking at it here. The authors are Chris Allen Jones and Jessica, let come in.
Kudos to them.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
kudos
it.
Kudos to them. I think it has the air of some of these amazing websites like the Pencil Pages. Have you ever looked at this one? Pencilpages.com. I have not. A fellow named Doug Martin was just, I mean, before any of us had any idea probably what the internet even was, he was building this amazing website about pencils. Just really digging in a next level kind of way. I really would recommend that anybody go visit it, but it's in just pure HTML. One of those kind of sites, updated February 1999.
Nice.
And when they're in HTML like this, they're absolutely blazing fast, and they remind you what a quagmire the internet has truly become.
It is really fast, you're right.
But there's just all these amazing articles. But so GraphiteConfidential.com kind of has some of the spirit of those old school, you know, collectors sites, but it's obviously, I mean, it's modern and everything, and it's just a really interesting deep dive. I'm glad you brought that up. One more, let's see. Oh, one more thing I was going to mention about the pens I've been using. So this maroon pen that magically changed color with the magic of tequila and triple sec being poured across it. It
everything is blue, man.
I was on the flight to get into Mexico, where you have to fill out some custom forms, and the woman sitting next to me, she was a mother, had her teenage kids everywhere. She's a bit harried and trying to fill out all kinds of forms and whatnot, and she turns to me and says, "I'm sorry. Do you have a pen I can borrow when you're done with it?" And I said, yeah, absolutely, here. And I pulled it out, and it was this kind of purple maroon Pilot.
Fuchsia.
G2, fuchsia. And I was like, it's purple, kind of. And we just had this moment where she was clearly trying to calculate whether, how an immigration official would respond to forms filled out in fuchsia ink, and whether it would be worth it to just take my stupid pen or to go whatever extra mile it would take to get somebody else's pen. She finally caved. She wrote all those notes or wrote out all those.
Yeah, how's she?
Purple.
Why is she being choosy? She's got no pen.
Can you imagine if she borrowed my pen and then went through the whole immigration process, got to the desk in there, went through the whole line, and the person said, "I'm sorry, what is that purple ink?"
Yeah, you're going back. You're not getting in.
So I made sure, I made clear that I was aware that it was a strangely colored pen, and that should she choose to use the pen, she was taking the risk herself, and I was absolving myself of all responsibility.
And how did she handle that joke?
Maybe it was the joke, and that one I kept on the inside. Right. It does. Good. It's one of those experiences that becomes a rule of thumb, though. Like, in future, if I can anticipate that I will be filling out any kind of legal documentation, the purple pen's going to stay home.
Okay. As a colorblind person, I don't worry about these things.
You just assume everybody else lives in a color blind, in the sense of all pen.
I've just got a good defense. But that actually, the fuchsia pen on the form reminds me. When you deposit checks, do you deposit them at a bank, or do you just use an app on your phone now?
App on the phone.
Right. So, do you still use a pen, or will you use a pencil for signing the check?
I think I would still use a pen. Just wouldn't.
See, I don't care what it is. Pencil, red pen. I'll just use whatever.
Because it's just digital. And then you toss the check, is that right? I actually have never done it before. Can I be honest for a second?
Okay.
My wife does. So when you get in, when you dig into the what do? A pencil, a pen. My lie was immediately exposed.
Okay.
But you just throw it away when you're done, right? Is that what happens?
Yeah. Yeah. You're supposed to wait 10 days and then throw it away.
So I guess it doesn't mean you just got to get it in a digital form.
Right. Yeah. How much does a gallon of milk cost?
We talking organic? Horizon?
I don't know. Are you drinking organic milk? This is our podcast about organic milk.
Actually, I do all the grocery shopping, but it's not interesting at all. I don't deposit checks, man.
All right. I've got a question about the grocery shopping. You're grocery shopping on a Thursday night. Do you always do your grocery shopping on a Thursday?
No.
Okay, because I think that Thursday was the traditional grocery shopping day way back when, for some reason that I can't remember. And that is why the grocery ads come out on a Thursday. Sorry, I apologize.
The Quakers of Pennsylvania would shop on a Thursday? Why would that be?
I will have the answer by next week.
That sounds good to me. Speaking of which, let's do this again next week.
Great talking to you, Ted.
Bye-bye.